The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Tuesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, what some thought was a rock in Gibraltar turned out to just be a pile of rubble. We're going to break down future odds for the Sweet 16 and show you which teams have the most sugar content. And when you've got a new coach walking into the Rose Garden, can he do anything to avoid being pricked by a bunch of thorns?
So, Dave, first take on a Tuesday. What did you see last night that you want to share with our audience today?
You know, so much of March Madness will be memorable to you. You see so many different highlights of things that you'll be able to take with you. It's the stuff you don't see because it won't necessarily make news that sometimes it's actually the biggest from a handicapping standpoint to learn to deal with. Yesterday on the show, we had that graphic talking about the two Illinois State players who just shot the lights out at Mississippi on Nick Moore and Tyler Brown. They went 14 out of 15. We're saying, you know what, you don't repeat that. When something swings too far in one direction, it tends to come right back. But how they do at Stanford, just swish after swish after swish. Two NIT road games in gyms that these kids had never played in before and will never play in again, they shot 24 out of 29 from three-point range. Now, again, go back and remember that chart we did about a month ago about the NBA All-Star game, that three-point shooting contest. Yeah, that line's a little bit further than the college, but you're not being guarded. 24 out of 29. No one's ever done that in the NBA three-point shooting contest. Here are a couple of middling guys, again, on the road, new arenas, just knocked all of their shots down. Of course, we don't get a chance to put that back in play because they lost last night, but it just goes to show you how awkward this can be. When we talk about slowly and methodically trying to grind away to make a profit, the reason why you do that in sports is because just about every single day, there's a bet out there you would lose your house on. So if someone comes up to me last week and says, hey, buddy, guess what? These guys are going to take 29 three-pointers in these two games, give you an over-under 23.5. I'm broke. I'm not here today. The janitor out in the hall? No. He's sitting outside because it's a nice sunny day. He's smoking a cigar. And I'm pushing his broom because I'm working for him. So whenever you think sports is a little bit too easy, watch for these signs that say, no, it's not. You got to grind away with it. We don't have full voice today, do we?
Well, I'm fine. We're fine. But sports is too easy.
I thought the audience might applaud.
Exactly. The day that I have laryngitis will be the highest rated show we've ever had. No question about it. I'm like, let Dave talk. But too easy. Sports betting too easy. After the weekend I had, sports betting is not too easy, Dave. And, you know, with the play of the days on the show, gave out three picks in the tournament preview show. And bang, over three. And I'll tell you what, frustrating but wrong. You know, so last night we got Philly, you know, and Philly plays the first half and they're pretty lethargic. They're up two at the break and lucky to be up two at the break. And I'm sitting there. It's almost what I wanted to talk. My first take's about the psychology of sports betting. You're talking about too easy. Never too easy, Dave. You have a rough weekend. Things aren't running your way. And all of a sudden you're looking at games at halftime going, oh, my God, I'm dead. You know, Philly comes out in the second half, plays the way we thought they were going to play, dominates the game, takes over. You know, they're up by 20 throughout the fourth quarter. All of a sudden, the lead's cut to like 18 or something with maybe three and a half minutes left. And I'm sitting there like figuring out the time. All right, well, if Charlotte comes down and scores and then the Sixers turn it over and the next possession, Philly turns it over. I'm like, oh, my God. You're thinking negatively instead of thinking positively. Obviously, the play worked out fine. Philly ends up winning the game by 25. We'll call it a right-side winner. But the psychological aspects of sports betting, they're intense, even for seasoned pros like myself and Dave. So we'll get into some of that when we do open up the mailbags in just a few moments here on today's Vegas Sports Day. First, let me set up the week. Again, we talked about this real briefly yesterday. Today, we're catching up on all the emails that you guys have been sending in. Thanks. Lots of interesting questions to answer. And we'll get to those in just a moment. Tomorrow, we're going to go do Thursday's Sweet 16 games. On Thursday, we're going to do Friday's Sweet 16 games. So all eight games will be covered before the first tip-off, so you'll have opportunity to do whatever you want in terms of parlays and futures action, which obviously you could do anyway because it's your money, but you'll have the opportunity to watch the show before you decide to make those wagers. So that's the way it's set up for the next couple of days. And let's just start. Let's get into the mailbag because we are a ton of good questions we want to answer. This is an interesting one. One of many questions, but let's take it easy. First of all, this one's from Louis. What do you guys know about the hedge fund Centaur Galileo that was supposedly dedicated to betting on sports? Why did it fail, or what happened? I find the idea of such a fund as one that could work. What do you think of it? Thanks.
We're probably never going to know the true story behind this. Centaur Galileo was up for about a year and a half. Here's the theory. Okay, we've got a lot of professionals here. We've got a lot of computer software, a lot of former bookmakers. We've got a team here. We're going to go out. We're going to bet on sports. You can buy into our hedge fund. I remember Mark Cuban talked about such a thing many years ago, about market inefficiencies in sports as compared to Wall Street. Now, Cuban had not entirely done his homework on proposing that. What Centaur Galileo did sounded right, and it was easy to get people in the game for that. But now there are a couple of problems. One is they didn't just lose, apparently. The money may all be gone. About 2.5 million U.S., about a little over 1.5 million pounds. When they were asked by a business reporter what went wrong, the quote they sent out there, and we're kind of dubious about this, sheer bad luck. That's what they said. Okay, well, we bet. And we asked, well, here's the problem. Where are the accountings going to come from? One of the difficulties with this fund is it was registered in Gibraltar, not in the UK, so that you don't have the same reporting functions. They were doing some things outside of just the traditional betting. They were trying to establish a couple of other little profit centers in there. Bottom line is it looks like they may have not just lost on sports wagers, because if that happened, you could gradually see the fund declining. But right now, it looks like all the money is gone. Was there ever a real intent to win? We don't know, and that's part of the problem. As the investigation continues, because of the reporting functions from Gibraltar, we simply may never know what was going on.
Yeah, and it's a shame, too, because, frankly, Dave, I would love to run a hedge fund, to be able to run a sports betting hedge fund. That's such a fancy way for what we call syndicates now. And the syndicate betting groups that are out there, in general, you have groups of investors or groups of bettors who pool their money together, and it allows them to take advantage of opportunities, both in terms of manipulating the line and then in terms of getting the best number once they actually reveal which side they want. But I'd love to do something public, open, where every day or every night you have the opportunity, where everything's, there's no stuff hidden. People know, hey, if you invested in this fund, guess what? Tonight you're rooting for the 76ers, or you're rooting for so-and-so at this number and then at this number, and then we took some back over here. But where it's open and accountable, because that obviously wasn't the case here, a little bit of a shell corporation issue. But maybe someday, Dave, maybe someday we'll have this opportunity, and it's something that I'd look forward to personally. What about yourself?
The public scrutiny each day is difficult because, again, the masters of this industry are good at that little bit of market manipulation. You want to lay four, you want to take six. Here's the key, though. When you lay that four, you want everyone to firmly believe that that's what you're doing, because that's how it gets to six. You do that a little too publicly, the steam doesn't work. Four doesn't become six anymore. Four becomes four and a half. Four becomes five. When it's out there every day, it's tougher to manipulate the marketplace. And yeah, that is a big part of how some of the people that are successful in this industry work. If you want to create a number, you know how to do it. So let's say a game we saw a lot of movement on this morning, Drexel, Massachusetts, from 6.5 up to 8. Is that people who like Drexel and are putting their money down? Or is that people who like Massachusetts needed plus 8 and have to figure out a way in the marketplace to create the 8? We'll know a little bit more about that one come tip-off time.
All right. It's a great question, Louis. Thank you. Here's one from Ed, north of the border. It says, one quick question. I am a semi-professional sports gambler up here in Canada, thinking maybe I should go about it full-time. I'm 43 years old and have an extremely good understanding of the biz. My question is, how often should I pay myself from my bankroll? Should I strive to keep a constant bankroll and take profits when they are there, or should I be constantly building the bankroll and paying myself just enough to get by? Your thoughts would be greatly appreciated. Thanks very much, Ed.
Of course, when you say just enough to get by, it depends on what the standards of getting by are. Some people get by better than others do. But you want to be able, though, to reward yourself, because then you become better in the behavior. A little bit of Pavlovian aspects to this. But yeah, if you've got a good cycle, you've got a little bit sitting there that's above what you need to get by, there's nothing wrong with enjoying it, because the process of enjoying it makes you want to come back then and work harder. You have a good football season, and that means a week in Hawaii, that makes you want to go back and have a good football season again. Again, find those little things to motivate, because if all you're doing is just building bankroll without doing anything with it, sometimes that motivation isn't quite as strong in that process. Very good question, though. And the type of thing we'll talk about more and more over the course of time, but you want to make sure that your lifestyle is bringing you back the type of energy to make you want to get up and work hard at this every day. When we talk about these ups and downs, there are a lot of psychological issues in play. Take care of that part of yourself, but no, absolutely nothing wrong with taking some money down and creating a reward every once in a while.
Sure. When you're counting on your bankroll as your sole source of income, you definitely want to err on the side of caution in terms of taking money out of your bankroll. In terms of how often you want to do it, doesn't matter if you want to do it once a week or once a month or once a quarter. However you want to do it. But in terms of extravagant expenses, you've had a good run. Guess what? You want to have something stashed away for a rainy day when you're not running quite so good. So I tend to err on the side of taking out less as opposed to taking out more. And that, of course, allows your bankroll to continue growing and growing as you continue winning. Great questions. We've got a couple more on the way. We'll do another section of Mailbag coming up next. But if you want to be involved in the show, hey, send us a question. The address, sportsday@covers.com. We answer as many good questions as we can on air each day and each week. You can follow us on Twitter, @VegasSportsDay. And, of course, you can get involved in the covers.com community with active threads and discussions going right now. Let your voice be heard. covers.com/posting.
Yes, today is the Cliff Clavin edition of Vegas Sports Day. It's all about the mail, and since our last letter came from north of the border, we can say thanks, Ed, and cheers. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because David from... You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Back to the mailbox, starting with Carl in San Francisco. And Carl says, John Lennon and Paul McCartney shared writing credit for all of their Beatles music, even when their creative partner had not equally collaborated in forging the tune. Aside from Ringo Starr's cameo contributions, the key to determining who chiefly created a Beatles tune is knowing that the song's lead singer is probably the primary author. So, there has to be an interesting behind-the-scenes story how Ted and Dave put the weekday show together, but is there any tip-off as to who's the lead pen for each Vegas Sports Day play of the day? Love the show and hope my mention of Ringo will inspire you guys to give your heralded janitor a shot at getting a cameo appearance on Vegas Sports Day. If you read my question, I hope you send me a Vegas Sports Day t-shirt, which we have none, or better yet, a pair of giant poster heads of both Ted and Dave. Got any poster heads, Dave?
Oh, gosh, I hope not. First of all, the janitor doesn't come in there because we can't afford it. He charges way more than we would. Is there an interesting story behind the play of the day? It's not interesting at all. But you'd be good to know that there's a scramble that literally goes on every day. It starts at 7 a.m. Pacific time. And you'd be surprised at how many times play of the day changes before we come on the air because numbers simply get away. Even times where we're scrambling here in studio right to the last minute, Jacob's got to go scramble and get a new logo in play because the numbers keep changing. The biggest problem is the best play at 7 a.m. is almost never left by 8:30 or by 9. That's where that scrambling begins. So there is a lot of back and forth, just not terribly interesting.
Well, I mean, it might be interesting if someone would be privy to our IMs or our emails. But the bottom line is, you know, Dave sends out a couple ideas. I send out a couple ideas. Whoever comes first, and then we eliminate, we add. I can tell you, I hate to tell it, but no, it's long enough now since it happened. But the day that Spreitzer was filling in for Malinsky at the end of February, and we had a play, you know, all set, you know, and then with Scott and I, it's not the same flow that Dave and I have, just because Dave and I have done the show repeatedly, and Scott and I, it was the first time doing it together. So we're debating back and forth. We liked Sacramento that day, and the line just kept on going up. They were playing, well, I think it was Utah. They went up from 1 to 2 and 2.5 and 3. I'm like, then 3.5, I'm like, we got to cut Sacramento. We ended up putting another play in. Wrong side loser, lost by 30, was maybe the worst play we've ever put up. And there were the Kings winning and covering when all was said and done, but the line had moved 2.5 points, and I talked myself and Scott out of it. So those kind of things can and do happen, but the bottom line, it's just a collaborative effort. Hey, you know, what do we have for guaranteed plays for our clients today? What do we have that looks good now that didn't look good necessarily when we were putting up those guaranteed plays? And Dave and I, you know, we come to a consensus on something, obviously, just about every single show.
We'll work on those bobblehead dolls or something. Maybe you could use as a dartboard, which is probably the best thing that you could do with them. Let's take another letter now. This one is coming from Robert. Starts out, great show, guys. I'm learning something new each podcast. Before the big dance began, you gave out 5 teams to be used as futures. 2 are left, Florida and Louisville. They both play Thursday. How do I take advantage of the 2 future tickets in my pocket now?
And it's an excellent question, Robert. And the answer, at least, again, personally, I have not hedged off either one yet. I may do that between now and tip-off. We'll have to see what happens. But as of this moment, I haven't done anything. And the advantage, of course, is that if you get through Thursday's games with these 2 teams intact, they're playing each other on Saturday. So you'll have one of these tickets live for the Final Four. But in terms of a hedging strategy, it really comes down, there are a number of different factors, and I think Dave and I are going to get into it here a little bit. But let's start with the concept of how much do you want to risk. You're talking about tickets in the 40 or 50 to 1 range. And when it comes to having a hedge 4 times, how much do you want to risk of that 40 or 50 to 1? Are you willing to risk half of it over the course of the next potentially 4 games in order to lock in some sort of a profit? Frankly, I am. And that, to me, that sounds about reasonable. I don't want to risk more than half of it, but over a 4-game span, that's what I'm looking or willing to do. So what do we have? We have a situation here with Louisville. You can take Michigan State on the money line here, minus 220, minus 230. You can also take Marquette on the money line against Florida, minus 120, minus 130 for the Golden Eagles in that range. But I think Dave's got a better idea than that when it comes to future prices to win the Western region. That might be the best way to get out this.
Yeah, what we're going to do in the next segment, we're going to give you the future book odds of each of the 4 brackets so that you can get a better idea, not just with the tickets that the emailer talked about, but any tickets that you have left in your pockets will show you some of those opportunities sitting out there in the marketplace as we go bracket by bracket in the next segment.
Up next, it's time to go to the Sweet 16 Future Board, as we just promised we would. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Ooh. Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Okay, we talked a little bit in the last segment. Well, we talked a lot in the last segment about working with future tickets for the Sweet 16. Now let's get down to business. Talk about the lines themselves, the odds, and we'll start with the regions that are playing on Thursday. Two regions playing on Thursday. Let's go to the East regionals and Boston. We have Ohio State at plus 115 to win two games over the course of the weekend. Syracuse, plus 150. Wisconsin, plus 450. And Cincinnati is the dog here. They're the long shot, plus 950 for the Bearcats to reach the Final Four.
Let's head out west to Phoenix now, where we've got Michigan State at plus 125, Marquette plus 285. Now the two teams talked about in the last segment, Florida at plus 350, Louisville at plus 450. You can see from reading those last two how nice it is to have those 40 and 50 to 1 tickets already sitting in your pocket.
Yeah, so what do we do with these numbers, Dave? When it comes to the first round, at first glance, like, ooh, Cincy. They're almost 10-1 to get out of the region. And this is a Bearcats team they have showed refused to lose. They did it in the Big East tournament. They did it in each of the first two games to reach the Sweet 16 at plus 950. Going to have to put two more upsets together. I just don't know if they're deep enough to do that. I love this team. They made me a lot of money this year. But frankly, I called in the bracket for Ohio State to reach the championship game, and I still, nothing that I've seen from the Buckeyes has changed my opinion about that one iota. So at plus 115 with Ohio State, I mean, that's not the price I'm looking for. So frankly, the whole region for me, I'm not doing anything with it, Dave. What about you?
Yeah, part of what you want to do with Cincinnati, and do this with some of the longest shots in most of these brackets, is handicap the other game as well. Think about Syracuse, Wisconsin. If you think Syracuse beats Wisconsin, if you're a Cincinnati backer, you're likely to do better playing two money lines than taking that 950. So you take whatever you'd win against Ohio State, factor that into Syracuse, that's going to pay better than that. We head to the other bracket, get directly to the point on your hedge opportunities. Okay? Marquette and Michigan State are both money line favorites on Thursday. But if you want to lock something up in this region, you could take Michigan State plus the 125, take Marquette at their dog price for small wagers. That way you actually have something coming out of here. Now, you will cash a Marquette or a Michigan State if they win it. You will not cash a Louisville or a Florida. You'll have that ticket alive into the Final Four next week, but you will not have cashed it yet. So here is your first opportunity to offset a 40 or 50 to 1, a little Michigan State and a little Marquette. You would cash immediately, which would help to pay for, you know, the tickets you'll have to tear up on Louisville and on Florida. So that's a better option, though, in this case, than playing them as the favorites on the money lines Thursday and then maybe having to come back with one of them again on Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. Rather than lay minus 230 with Michigan State just to win the first game, or laying minus 120 or minus 130 with Marquette just to win the first game, you can get both of those teams at that nice plus price to come out of the West. And then, bang, you're live with all four teams, and nothing that happens in the West can hurt you. Obviously, the profits will be greater if the longer shots come through, Florida or Louisville, but you're still lock in something for your effort with a Michigan State and Marquette ticket. But if you're starting from scratch here, you don't have any futures, I'm looking at these two dogs. I'm looking at both. I'm looking at Florida and Louisville. I continue to think those two teams are alive to continue making noise here in the Big Dance.
Let's move on to the regions now that are playing on Friday. Let's start with the South at Atlanta, Kentucky, a prohibitive minus 300. Baylor, plus 300. Indiana right now, you'll get 8-1 for your pocket. And Xavier, in the Sweet 16 for the fourth time in 5 years, being offered an 18-1. The market's not believing that experience actually means that much.
And let's go to the Midwest in St. Louis. We have North Carolina and Kansas, both even money, which you don't like to see necessarily if you're involved in the future market, because you're not getting a plus price return on two of the four teams instead of just one. And then, of course, two prohibitive long shots, NC State at plus 850 and plus 2,500 for Ohio. And you know, in terms of a personal assessment of that Midwest, you know, I like this Kansas team. I do. Well, let's see what happens with Kendall Marshall, because we're probably not going to know until tip-off on Friday. This is one that I personally think only the top two teams are alive in the Midwest. And Marshall's healthy, North Carolina might be more alive. If Marshall's not healthy, I do not think they'll be able to survive in advance past Kansas.
So here's what you want your thought process to be, because you can be a step ahead of the marketplace on it. Have that board in front of you on Friday afternoon. If Marshall is not going to be able to play, one of the first things they're going to do, of course, adjust the Carolina line against Ohio and maybe adjust that total. This future line off to the side may not get adjusted as quickly. So that gives you a good opportunity for Kansas. Our belief is if Marshall doesn't play Friday, no reason to believe then that he plays Sunday. It's not like 48 hours is going to make that much difference. You could possibly see him come back the following Saturday. But if you can't go Friday, it means you just can't go. Right now, you know, there's nothing that can happen in that short of a time. So while everyone else will focus on adjusting for that particular game, you might be able to lock in Kansas at even money, which would be a nice price. You would assume that Kansas beats North Carolina State and then goes off as the favorite over a Carolina team without Marshall. So if Kansas is favored and you've got an even money in your pocket, that means you could even hedge that back out at Carolina at a plus price come Sunday.
And the advice that Dave just gave you is really good advice, not just for March Madness, but all across the board. Whenever you see a major personnel move, Peyton Manning goes to Denver, and all of a sudden, but let's say this happened later. Let's say this is closer to the season when all the odds are up. Because there will be some big moves that happen in the NFL in July and August when their numbers to win the division and season over-under win numbers and all that kind of thing. So what happens when a big move like that happens, a big personnel move, what you'll see the markets do, boom, the sides get whacked, boom, the totals get whacked, boom, they're going to adjust the odds to win the Super Bowl, but they're not necessarily going to, let's say, have adjust the odds to win the division fast enough or to adjust the season over and win total fast enough. There are always going to be lagging indicators in the market that savvy bettors who have a bunch of windows open on their computer screens can take advantage of, both here in the NCAA tournament and in the other. But, Dave, we didn't talk at all about the South region in Atlanta. Kentucky minus 300, prohibitive favorites. Baylor, Indiana, Xavier, any of those teams live?
No.
Yeah, exactly.
Not when Kentucky plays well.
Yeah.
Yeah, when Kentucky plays the way that they've done so far in this tournament. And, again, we're not saying that Kentucky can't have a bad game. They have to play poorly to lose. If Kentucky plays well, these teams aren't going to beat them, especially – and what's going to be an awkward environment for shooters. We'll talk about this when we go to break this game down later in the week. Baylor's got to be able to knock down their threes. Indiana, they got to be able to knock down their threes. In the Georgia Dome, where the three-point shooting could be a bit hazardous, figure that Kentucky defense becomes an even bigger factor.
Coming up next, time to go to the Tuesday night board. It's money time.
No pressure. Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from, can't think of the name of my damn show, Golf and Other Four-Letter Words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, it's money time! This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers. Covers the numbers. Let's start with some NIT on ESPN action this evening in Seattle, where the Oregon Ducks traveling to take on the Washington Huskies. Right now, Washington, about 4.5 or 5-point favorites. And both lines, widely available like now. If you like Washington, you want to be laying 4.5 here. If you like Oregon, you want to make sure you're catching 5. This is one of those games that legitimately, whichever side you have, you can find the best of the number. This is a third go-round between two teams that do not like each other, two rivals. You know, it's not Michigan-Ohio State necessarily, but Washington-Oregon, neighbors, don't like each other. And the home team really dominated both of the first two meetings. Washington wins 76-60 at home on New Year's Eve. And boy, did Oregon give them a payback. 82-57 in the rematch in Eugene, a game where the Huskies were, you know, not pleased with their effort at the end, a game that they still think cost them a trip to the NCAA tournament. So this Oregon team, they played really well down the stretch. They were probably the best team in the Pac-12. Not the Pac-10. I know I keep calling it that. The Pac-12 down the stretch. 11-4 straight up in their last 15 conference games. The four losses during that span by a combined total of 10 points. They've been ATS machines. Even the loss to Colorado in the Pac-12 tournament just came by a single point. And for the season, this was an outstanding team on the road in Pac-12 play. But in truly understanding a trend or performance pattern, we also have to understand how the market reacts to those patterns. And that's a big part of tonight's value story.
And maybe a big part of the whole show today. When we talk about, you know, Galileo and their failings at the start, maybe they were genuinely trying to win the games and didn't. Here's the problem that most bettors have. Not most, 98%, 99%. You study the teams, you study the coaches, you study the point spread trends. You don't study the other bettors or understand the marketplace. That's why you'll hear a lot of people with these big, big databases talking about what the situation's 120 and 50 over the last 20 years. Guys have this stuff and don't ever actually win with it, because that component that's missing is the marketplace driving the line. So let's take a look at how Oregon has done on the Pac-12 road this year, which might look like a key dynamic heading into today. 6-3 straight up, 8-1 against the spread. But now let's start to put that into focus. Okay, you see tonight's line, Washington now around -4.5. New Year's Eve, same court, same teams, Washington -9. Rematch in Eugene, a little over a month ago, Washington -1. So what does that 8-1 point spread record for Oregon mean on the road? Actually nothing, because now the markets have done a lot of adjusting. Let's show you how much. Let's look at some of these Oregon road games in the Pac-12. They took 4.5 at Washington State. That's not Washington. 8.5 at Arizona, 6.5 at Colorado, 11 at California, 6 at Stanford. So you want to say, okay, here's this trend. They're 8-1 on the road. Yeah, that 8-1 was against entirely different price points. This is now a different marketplace. And this is what we talk when we talk about the idea of market efficiency. Markets adjust. We always try to say the best time to bet on a trend is right when it's just starting to happen. And one of the things people don't do enough is actually bet against what looks like a trend. If you see something that's 25-10, but it really should be about 50-50, you can bet it to come back. You sort of get the best of it coming in the opposite direction. So yeah, we love the way Oregon has played. We like the way that chemistry has developed. But if we're going to go to the well one more time, and we've gone to the well several times in these Pac-12 road games, if we're going to go to the well again, we're not getting that same market edge we were getting a few weeks ago. That's why we're a little bit hesitant to get in play here.
Yeah, and I mean, the Dana Altman versus Lorenzo Romar coaching matchup, you know, advantage Oregon. Altman has proven his mettle in these postseason tournaments, obviously already this year. He did it last year when was it the CBI or the CIT, the two tournaments that I never can differentiate between them. It was the CBI that Oregon won last year under Altman. You know, a great tournament coach. When it comes to personnel, however, you know, I mean, the Huskies got a couple guys going in the NBA draft. Not so sure that Oregon can match up with them talent-wise. And from everything, talent-wise, I should say, from everything I was reading in the local papers this morning, Washington was a team that was very disappointed in not getting an NCAA bid. But the fact that they can smell it, they can smell the NIT, they can smell a trip to Madison Square Garden, just one win gets them there. They are supremely motivated, not just because they can go to the NIT, but also to get a little bit of revenge for a team that absolutely annihilated them less than a month ago. But, you know, we look at Oregon pace here, and I think that's worth noting for a moment as well. In the first two NIT games, went over the total by a combined 68.5 points, just flying over the total, highest scoring college basketball game of the year in regulation when they played Iowa in their last game. But when we watch these bounces of the ball in the month of March, we're also reminded of the age and the maturity levels of the players involved. So as we're breaking the game down, couldn't resist bringing up this quote from Oregon's Devo Joseph. Quote, "We're a team that can score a lot. So if we hold a team to under 60 to 70 points, we're going to win 90% of the time."
99.
Oh, 99. Sorry, yeah. 90 to 99. You know, same difference, right? These numbers. 99% of the time. Joseph's a transfer from Minnesota. He's been their star player. When he became eligible, that's what elevated Oregon's season after a little bit of a rough start. He's a political science major. So if you've been following our presidential election year debates, he appears to be right on track.
Yeah, if we hold someone to 70 points, we'll win 99% of the time. And we bet money on these guys. You know, we bet good money on these guys. And speaking of betting good money, we moved to gentlemen that were a little bit older, but not necessarily any smarter in the NBA ranks. Let's head over to Portland in the Rose Garden, where right now, Portland, a four-point favorite over Milwaukee. Two teams going through a lot of transition right now. Seemingly both fighting to get into the playoffs, but we're not sure that they both are. Milwaukee just a notch out of the Eastern Conference. Portland starting to fall out of the West a little bit. So now part of our breakdown tonight is which team brings the most to the table. Portland, a tough personnel transition. You lose Gerald Wallace and Marcus Camby basically for nothing. You're getting a little bit out of Johnny Flynn and Hasheem to beat down the stretch, but not a whole lot. Now here comes a new coach trying to patch things together. And how tough is it in your first time in front of the home fans? Well, you've only had one day to prepare off of a seven-game road trip. And as we tell you time and time again, the first game at home off of a long road trip, one of the most difficult. Milwaukee, little different story right now. Five straight wins. In four of those five games, at least 30 assists, including a league-high 38 in a win over Cleveland. Nice little team chemistry going on. And whereas it's a very difficult setting for Portland coming home, for Milwaukee, this game actually lays out pretty well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the attitude right now, very good for the Bucks. They've been playing good basketball since the All-Star break, have pushed themselves into the half game behind the Knicks for that eighth spot in the Eastern Conference. And with teams like Boston, Atlanta, and Indiana all scuffling, there's certainly room for the Bucks to make the playoffs, even if the Knicks continue to play well. And this setting's about as favorable as it can be for a road game for Portland. Again, we talked about that physically, mentally fatiguing road trip in which the Blazers essentially said, all right, we're going to lottery this year. You guys go away. We don't want to pay you anymore. We're going into rebuilding mode. Meanwhile, here's Milwaukee that is in a real good situation. They have not played since the easy win over Golden State on Friday, and they've had time to practice. Major help when meshing in new faces for Scott Skiles and company. Here's a quote from Scott Skiles. Yesterday, we went hard and did plenty of scrimmaging and a lot of live work. Today, much less live work and more cerebral going through our stuff. We also have a shoot-around tomorrow, so it's been a nice little break and an opportunity to get some things done. Now, this Bucks team, you know, it's not just the addition of Monta Ellis on the perimeter. And Ellis is the one thing Milwaukee needed so badly in terms of a crunch-time scorer that, frankly, the Bucks didn't have. And that's why they lost so many close games when they couldn't get points in the fourth quarter when teams ramped up their defensive intensity. But they're also getting low post depth. Epke Udoh is a guy whose name doesn't get thrown around a lot. Kid can play, and he can play defense and rebound in the low post. With Brandon Jennings starting, it moves Carlos Delfino to the three, the role that he plays best, and it leaves them with a rare starting five in which all the players are good passers. You have Luke Mbah-Mute coming off a career-high 22-point, 17-rebound effort. This is a Bucks team trending the right way right now. Can't say that for the Portland Trailblazers. So guess what? That's going to leave us with a play of the day for Tuesday. And what? Portland's laying four here? Not in my world. Milwaukee plus the four. That's the Vegas Sports Day play of the day. Again, Bucks plus the points. That's the way we're going to look for Tuesday. And frankly, this is one game I want to have a taste of the money line. That's going to wrap it up for the Tuesday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll see you again.